The Night Flower. The Emperor and Empress, pleased with us, showered us with gifts. Empress Maria Theresa gave Wulfril a dark lilac outfit once worn by a young archduke, lined in gold braids and buttons and cuffs, a beautiful justicore over a matching waistcoat. I received a violet taffeta dress embroidered with ripe flowers and soft silver blossoms, adorned with snow-colored lace. Then came gifts of snuff boxes, 4 of them, along with 300 ducats, almost a full year of Papa's salary in the Archbishop's orchestra. It was more than my father expected. I knew this because he hummed as he packed the gifts away in our luggage, the edges of his eyes crinkled with the possibility of what our future prospects might hold. Mama squeezed my shoulders and gave Wulfril and me proud smiles. A year's salary earned in the span of a day. Papa could buy his new coat. Mama could have a new porcelain set. We could keep respectable company, occupy our space at dinner parties with our heads held high. When Papa told Wulfril and me that we had both done well, Wulfril only snorted. "The Emperor has no ear for music," he said. "Papa, he didn't even hear the string on my violin that was out of tune. He said instead that I play very accurately." Papa threw his head back and laughed.
"Well, he certainly knows talent when he hears it," he said, winking.
His eyes settled on me. Everything in me brightened at the approval in them.
"Isn't that right, Nanrul? The Emperor said you were truly blessed by God."
Even better than our royal gifts were the frequent mentions of our names on the streets, scattered in conversations, all murmuring about Herr Mozart and his remarkable children. We heard it from every corner as we prepared for our trip home. The gossip kept Papa in high spirits all the way back, despite the snow we encountered. By the time we arrived home, invitations had poured in. News of our performance in Vienna had already spread throughout Salzburg and beyond. All the nobility of Austria and Germany wanted to keep up with the latest trend, and we were it. Papa made the arrangements with a resolute face. "You will exhaust the children," Mama said to him one evening as she looked over the schedule he had laid out for us.
"The children will not be worth watching forever," he said. "This is only the beginning, Anna. There is no time to waste. We need to play for the royal courts, for all Europe."
He turned then to look at me and Wulfril.
"You love the performances, at any rate. Isn't that true?"
I nodded because it was true. Beside me, my brother clapped his hands at the thought of traveling beyond Austria's borders. My father smiled at Wulfril's reaction.
"Miracles from God," he said. "And so long as they can, it is their duty to perform God's work."
Wulfril brightened like a star, drinking in Papa's words hungrily. "Miracles from God." I took the words and folded them away carefully, letting the weight of them sit in my chest, savoring the memory of my father's pleased expression turned in my direction. This was my worth. Without it, I was simply a child. With it, I would be what Hyacinth promised. Immortal. Several weeks passed. I started to think that perhaps Hyacinth wouldn't return after all, that there was no task in store to repay him for his help. A part of me was relieved. Another part of me missed him, yearned for the wild song of his voice. Finally, my wait ended on a cold night in late April. A flurry of snow blanketed our windowsills. Wulfril slept soundly beside me, but the cold kept me awake. I rubbed at my toes to warm them, letting my eyes wander around our room before settling on the slit beneath our door. Every night, I half expected to see the light of fireflies again, like we had seen that night when Hyacinth had first appeared.
"I wonder if it feels like winter in the Kingdom of Bach, too," Wulfril murmured.
I looked down at him, surprised to see him awake.
He blinked sleep from his eyes and snuggled closer to me.
"I'm sure it does," I whispered. "Now hush."
The late hour and the chilly air had turned me grumpy. Vufril didn't seem to care. He sighed and folded his arms over our blanket, then turned his eyes up to the ceiling.
"I bet winter in the Kingdom of Back is different from winter in our world, isn't it?"
he said.
"I bet it doesn't feel as cold and the snow looks prettier." "Vufril, please,"
I frowned at him.
"Do you want Papa to scold you tomorrow for practicing poorly? Go back to sleep." "You're not sleeping."
Vufril grinned.
"You always get to make up the stories about the kingdom. This time I'll make it up and you can listen."
I sighed. There would be no quieting him.
"Very well, indulge me. Tell me something we don't know yet about the Kingdom of Back."
Vufril cleared his throat, then furrowed his brow in concentration. I watched him without saying a word. It was the same expression he made when he performed for an audience. I wondered, suddenly, if he saw the kingdom as I did, as sheets of music in his mind, an entire world laid out in neat measures and round notes on paper. I wondered if he heard what I heard whenever he played, if we had access to the same secret world.
"In the Kingdom of Back," he began, "the snow layers the forest in white, like frosting on the cakes at the bakery. And the ocean never freezes over. Its water feels warm even in the winter." "Yes,"
I whispered, listening half-heartedly. His childlike voice had started to lure me into sleep.
"Naturally. And the ocean has a guardian, too, just like the rest of the kingdom has the princeling."
Vufril paused to think.
"A fairy queen of the night, trapped in an underwater cave."
As he went on, I drifted away. The room around me blurred. I sank without protest into the early fog of sleep, and in my dreams Vufril continued with his fairy tale. I thought I could see light at the bottom slit of our door, and hear something that sounded like music from a clavier. My music. "Vufril," I whispered, shaking my brother. He halted in his story.
"What is it?"
he asked. Before I could reply, I saw him sit up and turn his attention toward our door. He heard it too.
"It's coming from the music room," he whispered.
His hand automatically found mine.
"It's my music," I said, suddenly afraid. "From my notebook. You recognize it, don't you?" "Of course I do."
Vufril swung his legs over the bed and tilted his head so as to hear it more clearly. We stayed like that for a long moment, silent, as the music continued. I shivered.
"It's coming closer,"
Vufril whispered. My hands went to the candlestick on our dresser. I lit it, then held the light out before us. The door squeaked, then opened into a tiny sliver. Both of us froze in our places, and my face grew hot with fear. I knew it was not our parents, and not Sebastian. It was Hyacinth. The princeling came accompanied, as always, by the dim blue glow of fairies flitting about him in tiny pins of light. He peered into our bedroom and looked idly around before settling his gaze on us. On me. "Nanril," he said. His voice wrapped itself around me in an embrace. "I am so pleased to see you again." And before I could wonder if he'd made himself visible to Vufril too, he turned to my brother and offered him a smile. "The little one is still awake, waiting for an adventure." Vufril grinned back, delighted.
"It's you!"
he exclaimed. "Yes, it seems so," Hyacinth said.
"Have you come to steal something again?"
Vufril asked. I swallowed at his words, afraid of angering the princeling, and elbowed him in the ribs. Hyacinth only laughed. The sound pierced my ears. I thought that it would certainly wake Sebastian or our parents. When he stopped, he fixed his eyes on Wulfril.
"I've come to ask a favor from both of you," he said. "But first, you must follow me. Quickly now."
He frowned at the candle in my hands. I noticed the way he shrank from its warmth, as if, even from a distance, it could scald him.
"Leave that. You will not need its light in the kingdom."
And without another word, he vanished from the doorframe. Wulfril leapt up first.
"Let's go," he whispered eagerly.
Before I could refuse, he had risen and hurried to the door.
"Wulfril, wait,"
I started to say, but it was too late. He had already rushed out. I slid my feet into my pair of slippers and followed his path, into our living room and out our front entrance, down the flights of stairs that would lead us to the main street. My feet crunched on snow. It surprised me so much that I cried out and stopped in my tracks. I stood in the middle of the Geitrudgasse with a sky full of stars above my head, illuminated by the brilliant light of two moons, hovering over opposite ends of the street. The city was deserted, the dim streetlights fading into the darkness around us. The snow did not look like how I remembered it from earlier that evening, dirty with mud and ice, shoved onto the sidewalks in heaps. This snow was clean and white, untouched. I looked up. All the windowsills were covered in this pure snow, so soft that I thought it would feel like a warm blanket to the touch. I reached down and put my hand against its surface. It fell apart against my fingers.
"The snow layers the forest in white, like frosting on the cakes at the bakery."
Wulfril's voice echoed somewhere ahead of me. When I looked in its direction, I realized that the little crooked path I had once seen from our window had now reappeared at the end of the Geitrudgasse. It led away from the buildings and toward the dark forest of upside-down trees, and at the forest's entrance stood the same sign that had been there when I'd last seen it. Now, though, I could read the words.
"To the kingdom of Back," I whispered.
Next to the sign was Wulfril. He waved at me. Somewhere in the forest behind him, I glimpsed Hyacinth's lean figure heading deeper in. I gathered up the bottom of my nightgown, shook snow from my slippers, and hurried to my brother. We walked in silence. The path started with cobblestones, but as we continued, the cobblestones began to fade away, growing sparser, until we walked on dirt lined with blankets of snow. Wulfril pressed against me as we passed the trees. Their roots reached up toward the stars and cut the sky into slivers. Their leaves curled at the bottom of each tree, and in them were pools of still black water, with no bottom that I could see. I remembered my own warning about the pools and pulled us away from their edges lest we fell in. Our surroundings had grown so dark that I could barely make out the path ahead. I tried not to look behind us. Shadows crept into every crevice when there was no light to push back their edges, breathing life into things that shouldn't exist.
"Are you afraid?" I asked Wulfril.
His small shoulders trembled.
"No," he lied. "Where do you think the path will lead?"
"Well, I can't be sure," I said, trying to keep him calm. "It is your turn to tell me a story, remember? Tell me, where would you want this path to lead?"
Wulfril smiled.
"To the shore," he exclaimed in a hushed voice. "To the white sand and warm ocean."
As he spoke, pinpoints of light caught my attention. They flitted from tree to tree, clusters that glowed blue, the same tiny fairies that had appeared in our music room on the first night. With them came the curious sensation that Hyacinth must be near. Sure enough, one of the lights came to rest in my hand. It felt like a feather.
"This way," it cried. This way!
And with their light, and that of the two moons, our path was illuminated just enough for us to see it, winding deeper into the woods. We walked for a very long time, until the forest grew darker and darker, and the trees grew closer and closer together. I wondered if perhaps we had missed a trail that could have branched away, but Hyacinth may have gone a different direction. The tiny fairies had faded away too, leaving us wandering alone through a colorless world. Finally, when I was ready to turn back, the darkness of the forest began to fade, and I saw what seemed like a strange blue light appear on the tree trunks.
"Do you see that, Vulfril?"
I said to him.
"Maybe we're almost there."
He didn't answer. It was just as well. I did not want him to ask me again whether or not I knew where this path could lead. The end to the forest was so abrupt that I stumbled on my slippers. The last of the upside-down trees now stood beside us, and in front of us stretched a shore of white sand that hugged the edge of a deep sapphire ocean, its color interrupted by two perfect silver reflections of the moons. I caught my breath at the sight of it. This was the ocean from my very first dream. Dozens of blue seashells lay winking against the white sand. Vufril noticed me, admiring their color, and, on impulse, picked one up and shoved it into his pocket. Hyacinth was waiting at the edge of the water. Tonight, he looked more like a boy than ever, his tall, slender frame covered with skeleton leaves, his hair rumpled. His eyes reflected the ocean.
"Are you cold?" he asked me.
I shook my head. The winter chill that had clung to us on the Geitodegas and the dark forest path did not exist here, and the ocean's water lay as still and flat as a mirror surface.
"Good."
The princeling nodded at us.
"I have a task for you both."
"What is it?" I asked.
Hyacinth gave me a sidelong smile and gestured toward the water.
"I need a night flower," he replied.
"You can find them at the bottom of this ocean, inside a hidden cave. I'm unable to get there myself. You see, I cannot swim well."
"These flowers grow inside an underwater cave," I said.
"Yes," he replied.
"This cave is a lovely grotto, and inside lives an old witch with wrinkled hands and long white hair. I sealed her in the cave long ago with the rising waters, and she has remained there ever since. She has stayed there for so long, in fact, that her feet have become part of the cavern floor. She cannot move from her spot, and her powers, although terrible, weaken when the twin moons are not aligned. Still, you must be careful. She can call great golden fire with her hands and engulf you with its flames. She feeds on the night flowers that grow along the cave walls and anything else she manages to reach."
Vufril's vision of a guardian for the ocean, I thought. A sudden sadness filled my heart.
"She must be very lonely," I said.
Hyacinth turned his eyes to me.
"Do not take pity on her. She will try to lure you to her with a sweet song, the most beautiful music you have ever heard in your life, so potent that sometimes sailors can hear it across many oceans. They call her the Queen of the Night."
He stepped closer to us.
"Do not approach her. Do not look into her eyes. Do not talk to her. She is not what she seems."
I swallowed, distracted by his nearness, and promised that we would not. He turned away from us and pointed out toward the still waters. Not far from the shore lay a series of rock formations, carved from limestone, and when I looked from a different angle, the moonlight washed them into silver.
"The grotto lies under the water in those rocks," he said. The waters are low right now, so you and your brother will have a bit of time to get the flower. Do not be fooled by this peaceful ocean. It will rise so steadily that you will not realize it until it's too late. Vufril listened with a determined look on his face.
We are very brave, he said, looking up at me. I'm not afraid.
The princeling smiled at him. You are indeed very brave, he replied, and looked back toward the rocks. It's why I've chosen you both for this task. Now you must hurry. I did not feel brave, but Hyacinth looked so calm and Vufril so eager that I nodded and started toward the water. The echo of applause from my performance in Vienna, the look of pride on my father's face, they came back to me now, filling me with the memory of joy. I had told Hyacinth I was ready, and so I was. My mind lingered on the night flower that we needed to retrieve. I removed my slippers. Then I waded carefully in, holding my breath in anticipation of cold ocean water. But the instant we dipped our feet into it, I realized that it was as warm as a bath, just as Vufril had said. I smiled in surprise. Vufril let out a giggle at the warmth and splashed right into it, getting water all over my nightgown. I looked back to the shore once we'd gone in waist deep. Hyacinth watched us from where he had sat down in the sand, his stilt-like legs crossed over each other. We swam until the rocks in the distance became very close, so that I could make out their jagged edges and the carpets of moss that grew in clumps on their backs. When we were near enough to touch the walls of the rocks, I wiped water away from my face and looked down into the ocean. The water looked lit from below, a brilliant blue. I took a deep breath and submerged myself to get a better view. Not far from the surface appeared a crevice in the rock. I came back up. Vufril, I said breathlessly. I found the entrance to the grotto. Hyacinth was right. The ocean had not risen yet, and the waters were low. We did not have to dive far to reach the grotto's entrance. The crevice looked dark when we approached it, but as we swam farther inside, it began to grow lighter, the same strange blue light that we had seen when we first saw the beach of white sand. I took a giant gulp of air as we surfaced inside the cave. The water tasted sweet, like diluted honey. I could hear nothing in the grotto except the sounds we made, the splash of water, our breathing. The light came from hundreds of flowers that grew along the sides of the limestone walls, black and violet in color, each with a glowing spot of brilliant blue light in its center. The limestone itself looked wet and crystal-like, almost clear. I saw Vufril stare in wonder at the scene. Garlands of heavily scented flowers hung so low from the grotto's ceiling that I could touch them. Then, we saw her. She stood in one corner of the grotto, where the lights from the flowers shone the brightest, leaning her head against a silver harp. And there, she wept silently. A long, tattered gown of white and gold draped against her slender figure. Her hair was snow pale, like Hyacinth said, and dotted with tiny black flowers. Her skin seemed delicate, the knot of her eyebrows thin and dark. I had been afraid to see her, picturing her as a withered, bony, witch-like fairy, but now I felt drawn to this poor creature. Wrinkles on her skin, soft in the blue light, gave her a fragile appearance. Her feet melted into the cavern floor so that I could not be sure where her legs ended and the rock began. Vufril pointed quietly at her shoulders. There, I saw that her wings were faded and torn, hanging limply against her back. She must have fought hard to escape this grotto. Vufril guessed what was going through my mind.
She is not what she seems, he whispered,
repeating Hyacinth's warning. Do not look at her. Do not talk to her. I turned my face away, my heart pounding. As I did, I noticed the black ivy trailing along the cavern wall behind her. The night flowers that blossomed there were much larger than the rest, their vines coated with angry thorns. These were the flowers Hyacinth had sent us for. The witch heard Wulfril's whisper, too. She lifted her head and looked around, bewildered, before settling her gaze on us. I froze. She must have been very beautiful when she was young, and even now her eyes were large and liquid like a doe's, framed by long, dark lashes and mournful shadows. She stopped crying. Hello, she said. Her voice sounded very weak. Do not speak to her. Hyacinth's warning seemed to echo in the cavern, but the witch's eyes were so mournful, so intent on me, that I heard myself reply. Hello, I echoed. Beside me, Wulfril gasped at my disobedience. We hoisted ourselves out of the water and onto the rocky floor.
I am sorry to disturb you.
The witch smiled at us. Not at all, dear child, she said. Come closer, please. My children were stolen from my side and I was sealed in this cave. I have been so lonely here, trapped for centuries without a soul to keep me company. Oh, tell me, little one, what do the twin moons look like outside? I swallowed hard. The words fell from my lips as if compelled by some enchanted force.
They are bright as coins, I said, and sit at the opposite ends of the sky.
She shook her head, back and forth. Ha! It's no wonder I am so weak. When they align, my magic shall come back to me, and I will find a way to return home. Have you come to free me? Her voice sounded so hopeful that I immediately felt ashamed.
I'm sorry, I said.
Wulfril squeezed my hand tightly.
We haven't come to free you.
The witch's smile grew wider. No matter. I have missed the sound of another voice. Come here, children. She held out her arms to us. Come here so that I may see you better. Wulfril looked at me with a frightened face.
She is a witch, he whispered.
Remember what the princeling said?
I shot him a warning glare. The fairy blinked at us, then giggled. Her voice was strangely lovely, as if she was younger than she appeared. Don't be afraid, little boy, she said to my brother. I will not hurt you. I know you will not stay long, but I only want to see your faces closely, to touch another's hand before I return to my prison. My thoughts fluttered, frenzied, through my mind. I did not know how we could pick one of the flowers from behind the witch. One of us would need to distract her, and the other would have to take it. I felt a pang in my chest at the idea of stealing from this lonely creature. Hyacinth's warnings still lingered in my mind, but they were starting to turn numb. Wulfril and I exchanged a pointed stare. Then I released his hand and started to walk closer to the witch. She smiled. What is your name, child? She asked me. Her words had begun to sound like musical notes, as if she sang each sentence she spoke.
Maria Anna Mozart, I said. I'm called Nanril.
Nanril, the witch repeated. What a beautiful little girl you are. You remind me so much of my daughter.
From the corner of my eye, I could see Vulfril walking alongside me, each time a tiny step farther away. He was going to steal the night flower. I kept my gaze locked on the witch.
Thank you.
I wanted her to stay focused on me.
What is your name?
I no longer have one, she said. Her voice caressed me in its folds, full of sweet melodies and muted violins. I'm afraid I have been here so long that I cannot remember anymore. The notes in her voice turned tragic, so that they tore at my heart with their sadness. I steadied myself. You look young and strong, child, she went on. She did not notice Vulfril's widening distance from me. She was too interested in keeping my attention. You could help me escape.
How would I do that?
I asked.
You are bound to this grotto's floor.
All you would need to do is take some of the water from the pool, she said, gesturing toward where we had come in, and pour it on my feet. It will loosen them from the stone. Her eyes flickered toward Vulfril. He stopped in his tracks, feigning innocence. The witch smiled at him, and I let out a breath. It would be difficult for us to sneak around her.
We have nothing with which to hold the water, Vulfril said. I am only wearing my night clothes. We have no shoes or thick aprons to use as a vessel.
The witch frowned for a moment at this problem.
Perhaps we can use one of the night flowers behind you, I suggested.
I pointed toward them.
They are very large. They may be able to hold enough water.
Her eyes lit up. Yes, she said. You're right, clever girl. She twisted herself around in place, bent toward the wall behind her, and picked one of the night flowers from the wall. It glowed more brightly in her hand, perhaps in fear, and I saw its thorny stem move slowly in her grasp. Vulfril watched it with wide eyes. I started to move toward her. I could see her wrinkles more plainly now, the circles under her eyes, the creases and folds, and the frailness of her skin. She continued to smile at me. Nanril, she whispered as I drew closer. The night flower glittered in her hand. Help me escape from this grotto, and I shall repay you in ways you cannot imagine. I can answer your wish. I can keep you from being forgotten, like I have been. I swallowed hard. How do you know about my wish? I said. My eyes darted toward Vulfril. Your brother can't hear me, Nanril, the witch said. Only you can. I know who you are, and I know what you want. If you free me, I can help you. I was so close now that the cold blue light of the night flower reflected against my skin. The witch's eyes bore into mine.
Did Hyacinth tell you? I asked her. He must have mentioned it.
Her lips turned down in a menacing frown. You sound like you're very fond of him. I hesitated, unsure whether I should answer her. And what is it that makes you so fond? She said. The sweet violins in her voice now turned bitter, the nostalgia shifting into a dark memory.
Should I not be? I asked her.
A seedling of doubt against Hyacinth was planted in my mind. Careful what she says to you, I reminded myself, alarmed. That isn't something I can tell you. Do you trust him?
I don't know.
She held out the flower to me. You would do well to trust me instead, Nanril. I took a deep breath. Behind me, Vulfril stood unmoving beside the cavern pool. I turned back to the fairy, reached out, and took the night flower from her hand. Her touch, colder than the wind of a winter night, froze me in place. I wanted to cry out. Instead, I found myself staring at her, overwhelmed by the sound of music that came from deep in her throat. The melody flowed through her body and into my hand, wrapping itself around my skin, refusing to let go. I closed my eyes, unable to tear myself away from her. I wanted to be a part of the music so badly, ached for it to swallow me. It sounded like it came from everywhere, from her throat, from the air, from deep inside me. But the ice of her touch turned to fire. It threatened to scorch me from the inside out until I turned to ash against the walls. Bufril's voice came from somewhere far away, another time and place.
Nanrol,
I thought he said. I could not move. The music roared in my ears. The white of the witch's eyes had completely filled with blackness. She did not smile any longer. The music that flowed in me turned deafening, shaking my limbs. Pain shot through my chest. It was too much. Then I felt a warm hand grab mine and pull me away. I gasped for air. My other hand stayed locked around the night flower. I glanced around in a daze and realized that Wulfril had broken her hold on me and was running with me toward the pool. Behind us, the witch shrieked. Help me! She screamed. Fill the night flower with water and pour it on my feet! Free me! Such anguish pierced her voice that a part of me yearned to go back to the music that flowed in her. My heart tugged against her magic. No! I struggled against it, then forced myself away with all my strength. The witch tried to lunge toward us, but we were too far now, and diving back into the water where she could not reach, where her grounded feet prevented her from following. The warmth of the water washed away the last of her icy magic's pull. The instant we plunged into the pool, I lost my grip on the night flower. Wulfril saw it happen and grabbed it. We swam away from the grotto and out through the crevice, where we could no longer hear the witch's cries. We swam away from the rocks, back toward where the deep blue ocean became shallow, and hugged the edges of the beach's white sands, away from the cave of night flowers. Hyacinth was standing exactly where we had last seen him. I trembled as he approached us. Water dripped from my eyes and down my face. Wulfril shivered beside me, clutching the flower to his chest. When the princeling saw the night flower in my brother's hands, his eyes lit up and he let out a laugh of joy. Splendid! He exclaimed. He gingerly took the night flower from Wulfril's hands, then patted my brother's cheeks twice in affection. You've done very well! Wulfril beamed, pleased at his praise, and wrapped his arms around himself with pride.
Why do you need the flower?
I asked Hyacinth. He glanced at me, then leaned down, very close, and kissed my cheek. His smile was sweet and grateful. It is part of what I need to reclaim my throne in this kingdom, he replied. Soon, you will see. I frowned.
I don't understand.
But Hyacinth had already turned away and motioned for us to follow him back into the woods. I looked down at Wulfril again. He seemed tired, and his long lashes dripped water. A bright spot of blood pooled on his thumb. He had pricked his finger on the flower's thorns. I woke with a start. Gone were the ocean and the fairy queen and the night flower. Gone was the princeling. I was lying in my own bed with Wulfril breathing gently next to me, his eyes quivering ever so slightly underneath his lids. He had one of his thumbs in his mouth, a habit that returned whenever he dreamed. I stared at the ceiling. A dream. The words echoed in my mind. But it had all felt so vibrant. The shore had been so white, the shells so blue, the water so warm. The witch's eyes so dark. Still, it must have been a dream. Had to have been. What had Hyacinth said he needed the flower for? I couldn't remember. Nor could I think of what we had done after we surfaced again. Hyacinth had praised us, hadn't he? I looked at Wulfril again, then gently pulled his thumb out of his mouth. There, along the top of the tender flesh, was a small cut and a drop of blood. He must have bitten his thumb a little too hard during the night, I thought. But the vision of the nightflower's thorns and Hyacinth's smile had not yet faded away. I continued to stare at my brother, until the room began to blur again, until this time I sank into a dreamless sleep.